Please help me welcome J. Lauren Norris.
Have you ever heard the phrase, cut to the chase? Cut to the chase! It's usually a scriptwriter or a Hollywood producer who's listening to the details ramble on about the story. Maybe you've been in that conversation with someone who decides to tell you a story about their life, and by the time you're done, you know what size their flip-flops are and what color their socks were on their 14th birthday in 1962. And you wonder, are any of those details actually germane to the story that you're telling me? Or are you just describing the scene that you recall in your head because the rest of the details are foggy? I don't know. But I have to wonder, why are you giving me these details and will they matter to me? Is there a test? Is there a test on the details? Today we're going to talk about details in your story. Which ones belong and well, which ones don't. Stay tuned. I'm J. Lauren Norris with Leading Leaders Podcast. And in today's episode, we're going to have a callback to a Story Power Masterclass from 2021, right after the COVID lockdowns were over. And we had some very interesting people. I think this class was about 12, maybe 13 people. And so we had some great stories. We did what we always do, and that is you tell your story, and I'm going to retell it and add a couple of highlights. And then usually there's not a whole lot of coaching right then. We take the conversation into kind of a round table after everyone has done their story, and we discuss as a team, kind of a group coaching style, all of the different aspects that we learned from the way they told their story and then how I retold it, and then we jump into the curriculum. So what you're about to see is just about a 5-minute clip of Shauna Boyd telling her story, and then I'm going to retell it. And then when we come back from that video clip, I'm actually going to do some teaching around the concept that the clip highlights. So don't go away. The rules, right? Tell me any story you want to. First, you got to give me a call to action. So what do you want to happen?
I would say to resonate with just identity in each of us.
Individual identity?
Yeah, individual identity.
Yeah. Okay. All right, you ready? So. When you start talking, she's going to start the timer. All right.
I was 13 years old, and my parents shared about my dad's family and that they wanted to fly us to New York and to meet his side of the family. And so I got to go and meet his family and got to hear the story, meet my grandparents and my family, who my dad was the only child from another marriage, and there were 6 other children, and they were all biracial. And so I'm from Kansas, Belleville, Kansas, a little town in Belleville, and get flown and get to meet all my cousins, all my aunts and uncles. And I remember going to, I'm just being excited about it, and going to, it was actually like a Neiman Marcus or somewhere in New York, and my grandma took me there because I liked Michael Jackson, and to get me like a jacket. And I remember standing in the line to check out, and I was holding my cousin who was biracial, and it was the first time I experienced prejudicism, and it just hit me hard. And that has penetrated from that moment on. I came back, and I experienced it for 2 weeks, racism and prejudicism from both sides, black, white, different people that I was around, just based upon being multicultural in the environment with my family. And that set a tone for me to come back home, and God began to give me dreams and visions of unity and love and just placing in us who He says that we are as individuals, and a passion to raise children who know who they are and that they're created in His image, and not to allow anyone else to tell them who they are than the one who created them.
Are you good? You're recording me?
I don't have my phone out here.
Okay, that's fine.
Sorry, I want to.
Do you want to leave?
Thank you. I was so excited, a young teenager, and I got on the plane in this tiny little town in Kansas, and we flew to the Big Apple, to New York. We got to go to Neiman Marcus, and I remember, I will never forget standing in line holding my cousin, which I had never met him before. It was so cool just to be with the rest of my family. What I didn't realize, though, was as cool as it was to me to be reuniting with this part of the family I'd never met before, the fact that their skin color didn't look like mine was uncomfortable for some people. And my excitement began to wane over the next 2 weeks as I realized how many encounters with this biracial family of mine. Well, there were prejudices on both sides. There were people of darker skin and people of lighter skin, and they just couldn't seem to get it in their hearts that we're family. I mean, every way, we're family. We have different skin color, but we're family. We came from the same place. We're family. And it breaks my heart even now when I look back and I see how divided we are and the prejudices and the racism. And I will never stop doing all that I can to help people understand that your identity is in your individualism. It's not about your skin color. It's not about who you voted for. It's not about anything else. It's about who you are. It's your identity. It's as individual as your fingerprint. It's you. It's just you. Was that authentic enough? Was I close to your story? You see how the details of the events begin to paint something else into the picture? It allows you to kind of come into the emotion. And there's a lot more we can add to that, even in a short period of time. How long was mine, Karen?
It was 1:30.
1:30. Okay. That doesn't seem like a long time, though, does it? Okay. Who's next?
So a 90-second story can include enough detail for someone to kind of feel like they were there. And if they've ever been in a similar scene, the same kind of scene, maybe it wasn't even in the same place. We didn't talk about standing in line at a very particular event where you might say, well, I've never been to a Taylor Swift concert, so that doesn't really apply to me. Or you might say, I've never been to a Post Malone concert, or I've never been to the Super Bowl. Those, you're talking about high ticket items. That's not me. I've never had that pleasure. And so the result is, I feel like I'm not included in this scenario. Well, it's not true. It's simply not true. If the detail of the story takes somebody to the extent where they feel like I'm not included, I'm not a part of this, that kind of changes the whole purpose of the story. But if you leave out all the detail about what you saw, what you felt, and enough that you don't include the people in the audience, then they're not sure it's a real event. Maybe a teaching point, maybe an anecdote, but was it really an incident that you lived through? And so there's a really fine balance between telling enough story that people can, enough detail in the story that people can kind of see themselves in it and sense it without giving so much detail that they can disclude themselves from it and say, I was never there. I don't know what you're talking about. I've never had that privilege, that opportunity, or that tragedy or that trauma in my life. And so I just don't get it. And you'd be amazed if you listen to some of the greatest psychologists. It's amazing to me, at least, how often people will look for the escape, especially if they sense that there is a teachable moment coming. If they feel like you're going to come to a conclusion that's going to require them action, that they're going to have to be changed or transformed, they will look for every escape from application they can possibly find. Now, I'm willing to guess that if you are paying any attention to this program, if you're especially paying any particular attention to this entire series of Story Power training, that you have something deep down inside you, something that resides in you that says, I want to change people's lives. I want to bring a better quality of life to them. I want to bring better understanding to them. I want to bring knowledge and wisdom to them that perhaps they didn't have before. And if that's the case, then what you're end game isn't, it's not just to get the eyeballs and the views. Anybody can do that. Anybody can create cat videos or use AI to write a book in 45 minutes and make millions of dollars. That's fine. More power to them. But if it's not about eyeballs and dollars, if it's about genuine transformation, then you can't just get their attention for 3 to 30 seconds. You've got to keep their attention and their emotional commitment. Remember, if you haven't seen it, go back and watch the training on investment. Being able to be a storyteller that brings transformation to somebody's life means you've got to invest yourself in this story. Not just having lived through it. That's awesome. In fact, that's a requirement. Not just having experienced the pain and found the solution. That's also a requirement. But also to be able to look back at the story and say, how much of the story am I willing to tell? How much of this pain am I willing to recount in public? How much of this life experience is of value for other people? Now, as you're asking those tough questions, that's kind of where you come up with the defined box of the story that will allow you to discern how much detail I need to include. Let's go back to the psychology of your listener. The audience has a tendency to say, if I'm going to find myself confronted with change or transformation, that's a little harsh. That requires something of me that I'm not sure I'm up for. Not a bad thing, just a true thing, and that's okay. But the real question now is, what do you do with that? What do you do with that reality? If you know that they're going to say, change is hard. Change is not what I'm looking for right now. I came to be entertained. I didn't come to be changed. I'm not looking for transformation or reformation in my life. I'm just looking for affirmation in my life. Those, my friend, are different. And the amount of detail that you, as a transformative speaker, teacher, trainer, leader, put into your stories will make the difference for them. If you've ever been in a scenario where someone's relating to you a deep and tragic, painful story, and you realize at some moment you checked out, you're not listening anymore, and then they get to the punchline and they have tears in their face and you're thinking about macaroni and cheese, maybe it's because they had too much detail in their story. Maybe it's because somewhere along the way you got lost and you weren't really tracking with everything that they said because it wasn't relatable to you. Or maybe you hold the psychology of most humans, and that is, if you're pushing me to a point where I'm going to have to change, that means I'm going to have to confront some truth that I'm already dealing with in my own life, and I've got to consider whether or not the pain of staying the same is greater than the pain of the change you're asking me to make. Great storytellers, great communicators have the ability to push somebody to that edge without pushing them over it. They give them all the reason to understand the dilemma, identify the pain, and then take a look at the solution and decide for themselves, is this for me? When I was trained in coaching by Christian Simpson, he brought up the suppositions, the presuppositions that differentiate a mentor from a coach, from a teacher, from a psychologist, from a pastor, from a friend. And one of the points that he made, I'll just use these two, between mentor and coach. The mentor has the presupposition. I've been there. I've done that. I know what the pain is. I know what the solution is. And if you'll trust me, I'll lead you through this quickly. I'll shorten your learning curve. I have the answer you're looking for. That's the presupposition of a mentor. The presupposition of a coach is entirely different. The presupposition of the coach is, you already have the answer in you. My job is to ask the right questions until you reveal it to yourself. Which means I'm going to lead you, perhaps, by the questions that I ask, through a maze of your own thoughts, your own emotions, your own story, your own experiences, right up to the edge of that decision-making cliff. And at that decision-making cliff, the mentor might go, all right, next, jump. Seriously, if you want the transformation, if you want the change, if you want to reach what's on the other side, you've got to jump and grow your wings on the way down. Jump and catch a parachute in mid-flight. That's your best chance. You're not going to survive if you stay right here without staying in the same stuff that you're in now. If you want to change, you got to jump. A coach will stand at that same cliff with you and go, what are the benefits of jumping? What happens if you don't? If you stay where you are, what do you think will be the next result? What will the next relationship, the next Valentine's Day, the next Christmas, what will it be like? And would you be happy with that? Do you see the drastic difference between the two? Now see, as a communicator, as a storyteller, when you understand those things, then embedded in the details of the story is the invitation for someone to decide for themselves, do I want to jump or do I want to stay? It was a massive fire in Maui back in 2023. And there were stories of people who literally ran to the edge of the world from where they were standing, the cliffs near the ocean, and they made the choice, do I stay and fight the flames and risk being burned alive, or do I jump from an unknown height to an unknown depth? One of the stories that was recounted was a young man who, for whatever reason, either had his waterproof phone or his action camera going. He jumped off that cliff and he floated from what I believe 17 hours. That's insane. He floated 17 hours waiting for safety to come back to shore because there was no landing beach for them to make way to. All that was left was the sheer cliff they jumped off of. They survived the fire and put themselves in peril of who knows what in the ocean. But they survived. See, a great story leads you through the detail that maybe gives you just enough detail to say, this is a cliff. I don't know how high it is. I don't have a measuring tape. I've never been at the bottom looking up. I can't tell you. I also don't know how deep the water might be. Are you jumping into 20 feet of water or 75 feet of water? I don't know. Are you jumping into 2 feet of water and you're jumping to your own injury? I don't know the answer to that question. But the better question might be, what happens if you stay? What if you don't jump? Now see, the details might be important there. If not jumping is, okay, so I sit here in my lawn chair and I watch everybody else jump. I sit here in my lawn chair and I fish. I sit here in my lawn chair and paint a picture. If that's the alternative to jumping into the unknown from an unknown height, then maybe I just stay because that seems logical. But if the details left out were, oh, by the way, there's a raging wildfire chasing you down. This is kind of the end of the cliff. Or there are people with guns chasing you down, and this is the next logical thing. How many times have we seen that in the movies, whether it's Indiana Jones or whatever else, right? It's amazing to me how often we tell these stories that they don't include enough detail for somebody to make a decision based on. They don't include enough detail for somebody to say, I feel myself in that story. I've been in a very similar scenario. Maybe it's just the scenario that's similar, but it's not necessarily standing in line waiting for the next iPhone or standing in line waiting for Taylor Swift tickets. It's, I don't know, waiting in line to the barbecue place. The stakes are much lower, right? The environment much more common. Maybe you don't even like barbecue. It's the fish place or the sushi place. You see how those details, waiting in line in a restaurant versus waiting in line at the concert, waiting in line to get onto the train, waiting in line to go through security at the airport. Waiting in line is a common denominator. That next line of detail makes all the difference in the world because different people have experienced different events in those lines. I mean, waiting in line to pick up the kids at school. Okay, is that the drive-through line? You're sitting in your car, listening to the radio, scrolling on your phone, waiting on your kids to come out the door. That's an entirely different set of anxieties and issues than waiting in line to walk across the stage and get your diploma. For the high school diploma, or the first undergrad diploma, or the third postgrad diploma. See, even those scenarios are different. And yet the experience isn't as common. If you just say, I was waiting in line, there's not enough detail for anybody to go, oh, I've been in that line. Well, waiting in line for what? To get your drink at Starbucks? To get your Prescription filled at the pharmacy, at Walgreens or CVS or Walmart? Waiting in line for what? Waiting in line is a very mundane statement. Now, here would be the next question when it comes to that detail. Is the detail of the incident itself germane to the point that you want to make later? See, if I just said I was waiting in line, and the fact that I was waiting in line, the place that I was waiting in line, the environment of the waiting in the line, the emotions that came with waiting in line were not relevant to the rest of the story. Then to say I was waiting in line when XYZ happened would be okay. But to paint that scene, to say I was waiting in line, would be entirely different if I was waiting in line to go through the TSA checkpoint to get on a plane to fly to Europe or to fly out of Pakistan, as different as I was waiting in line to get my diploma or I was waiting in line to get my prostate exam, right? It's a whole different scene, whole different set of emotions, whole different audience of resonance. The minute you put waiting in line two, what comes behind two changes everything. And again, if what happened while you were waiting in line is irrelevant to what line you were waiting in, that's fine. Understand that somewhere along the way, you're going to have to make that clear. Why are you telling me you're waiting in line when XYZ happened to you if waiting in line had nothing to do with it? If where you were waiting in line or why you were waiting in line or with whom you were waiting in line, if none of those things matter, then why put them in there? Especially when you have a compressed amount of time to tell a story. If you can tell the entire story in 90 seconds, why waste 5 minutes? If you've got 5 minutes to tell the story, why try to compress it to 90 seconds unless you have more important information to follow it? Are you with me? I hope so. Because there's a whole lot of detail that you can put into a story in a sentence or two. I was waiting in line to get my hair cut. That's pretty ho-hum. Unless that was the first day of basic training. I was waiting in line to get my hair cut, and I watched every person coming the other direction with their head completely bald. I mean, I just got my hair trimmed, hoping they would leave it alone. No, everybody's head is as bare as a baby's backside. That's my future. In the next 5 minutes, my head is going to look like a baby's backside. Seriously? That's not what I signed up for. That's not what I came here for. Now my heart's beating a mile a minute. I don't want to look like that. They look ridiculous. Oh, and what are those glasses that look like? Holy cow, you'll never get a date with those glasses. See how all of a sudden the detail of the scene changes the whole emotional environment, the whole expectation. I was waiting in line to get a haircut on the first day of basic training. Oh yeah, if you've ever been there before, that's all the detail you need. If you've never been there before, ask yourself as a storyteller, is the rest of the detail better implied, or do you need to explain it? I was waiting in line for my very first sports physical. I was 12. If you know, you know. Turn your head and cough is in your near future. If you don't know, okay, I'm not talking to you. Talking to those other people who have stood in line to get their very first sports physical, you know what I'm talking about. And see how just the implication of a detail you didn't even reveal, because someone has a shared experience, they know what that emotional set feels like. If I said to you, comparatively, to use details in the abstract, when the minister says, do you take this woman to have and to hold for the rest of your life? What's going on in the mind and the ear of the man is, turn your head and cough. And see, we've painted two very separate pictures with two seemingly unrelated emotional sets. But I think if you ask most married men, I've been married 30 years, almost 30 years now, 30 years in September. Most married men I know would say, ooh, I never thought of it. But now that I think about it, you're right. That's exactly the emotion that I felt on that day. Kind of the, I'm terrified and I don't know what's next. Yeah, welcome to marriage. Almost 30 years in, I still sometimes feel like I'm terrified and I don't know what's next. Just like turn your head and cough. But see, the details that you need to express that emotion are completely different based on the audience in front of you and the emotion that you're trying to connect with them. If you have a shared experience, you can simply give the relative information of that shared experience and you've said everything you need to say. If you know, you know. I actually saw a news report the other day where the headline, I was shocked. I was shocked they went this far. But the headline said, burglar is in the find out phase of what happens when you rob XYZ. And I thought, well, there's only one way to get to the find out phase. That's the FAFO, right? You got to do the first before you can do the last. You got to F around before you can find out. But this burglar is in the find out phase of what happens when you rob this kind of place. Not a good scene for the burglar. Pick the wrong place to try to get his loot from. But if you know what FAFO is, then being in the find out phase tells you he already did the first part. Probably not a good idea. If you've never heard that phrase before, that seems like an abstract concept. Here's what that means. I'm not talking to you. I'm talking around you. Talking past you. Talking over your head. Perhaps even intentionally. I heard a great comment this morning on an interview between a comedian that they've been trying to cancel and a psychologist. And the comedian said, look, I'm not a big fan of screamo music. And so I spend zero amount of my time thinking about, worrying about, hating on people who produce screamo music. I've never once sent a letter or a postcard or tried to cancel someone who does screamo music. I don't care enough to bother with them. I've got plenty of things to think about in my day already that I don't have to focus on screamo music. So it's fascinating to me, out of 8 billion people on this planet, when 2 or 3,000 or even 30,000 or even 100,000 feel like they've got to focus on me. They don't like me. They don't like my comedy. They don't like what I have to say. But if they're standing face to face with me and they don't like me, rather than waste their time screaming at screamo music, why don't they just turn around and face the other 8 billion people on the planet, forget I exist? I'd be okay with that. He makes a really good point. And the challenge that we see sometimes in the detail of our story is that we try to include everybody and it's not necessary. Talk to the people who have the experience and the pain that you have recognized you have a solution for. Talk to the people you have a solution for. Share the details that are germane to the point you're making relative to the people you have a solution for. You'll save yourself a whole lot of time. And everybody else, a whole lot of heartache and a whole lot of thinking about mac and cheese. I'm J. Lauren Norris with Leading Leaders Podcast for Tell It Like It Is TV. Have a blessed day.
Lauren is a master teacher on storytelling, and I learned so much. I'm really going to have to sit down and go back through everything, and I think I might have to have some more coffees with Lauren, but it was totally worth my time, and I really highly recommend it if you're looking to grow your ministry, grow your business, grow your career. Lauren will serve you well.
Thank you. Subscribe now for our extensive video library of leadership lessons promoting faith, family, and freedom.